with Minnesota and comes to us on Tuesdays and Fridays. So, you know, when flowers come in on Tuesday, right away we're pre-pulling a lot of stuff in the summer months because it's sold for weddings, where the rest of the year it's not so much of that. It's just kind of stuff to fill the cooler for us to use throughout the week. It's not necessarily pre-sold once we order it. So that kind of just changes our routine up a little bit, and then making sure we're keeping things that we want to open and look perfect and beautiful for likely the Saturday wedding, versus putting stuff that we don't want to open straight into the cooler. So it's a lot of like juggling, you know, that forethought of what do we want it to look like on Saturday. So we need to plan ahead to make sure it's either left out or in the cooler. If that makes sense.
Wow. Yeah. I want to ask, is there a hot flower this summer? What's everyone going for?
You know, calla lilies are coming back and having their moment.
There we go.
I haven't really done many calla lily bouquets in the last few years, and that this really like modern, sleek, not a lot of greenery style is kind of what I'm seeing a lot of when the brides are coming in with their inspiration for their weddings. So that's kind of fun and different. You know, we're still very white rose heavy when it comes to weddings, but we're also starting to see more color again. For a while, it was greenery and white, or like eucalyptus and white flowers, or just white roses and baby's grass. And now we're seeing a little bit more variety, which is, it's always fun as a designer to have a little more variety. So week to week, it's a little different.
Madeline, what drew you to getting into the florist business?
It's kind of a long story, but I'm a firm believer in things happen and come to you when they should come to you. And my grandmother actually owned a flower shop down in the Twin Cities when I was really little, like Juniper's age, kindergarten. She used to watch me during the day when my mom and my dad were at work. So I would spend some time at the flower shop. When I was in college, I went to Bemidji State. I worked at Katy Floral, and, you know, just wanted to feel close to my grandma. So I worked there part time, and it's just kind of rolled into a career for me and being an entrepreneur. I didn't think I would own a flower shop. Like, that wasn't my goal growing up necessarily, but, life has brought me here, and I'm really happy for it. And we're actually coming up on 10 years of business ownership here on July 1st. So,
wow. Well, congratulations. That is, I didn't know the lore that there was a Katy Floral connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Back when Rachel owned it, she's no longer the owner anymore, but, he was definitely a very special place for me in college, and feeling that connection to home and whatnot, being able to work there. So I'm very thankful for that.
Do Darby and Juniper like coming into the flower shop?
June, do you like coming in? I'll see you soon. Can you say louder?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She does. she just started really kind of creating her own designs when she comes into the store, which has been really fun to see her explore. She wanted to make one for my husband last week as an early Father's Day gift, and she did. I'm so proud of her because she did start to finish it completely by herself without any suggestions or help from me. She filled the vase, she cut all the flowers, she arranged them, and it had depth. It had style. It had a nice color palette. Like, it looks so great, and it still looks good. So she did a great job cutting everything, too. Like, it's still on her counter at home, and it's still opening beautifully. So she did a good job of taking care of the flowers so they last long in the vase when she did it. So I'm really proud of her.
Wow.
Yeah, it runs in the family.
Yeah. I'm not trying to force her into it, but she loves it. So it's just so fun to see her explore. So
get her on her
career. And then Darby's only Darby's only three, so
okay.
She's just pure chaos when she comes into the store.
We'll give her time. So Madeline, why do you listen to KEXE?
You know, Juniper and I have started, I drop her off in the morning. She was in kindergarten this past year. I drop her off in the mornings. And so it's been fun to listen with her, like, especially the phonology reports too. So like, if I have to run and drop her sister off, you know, and she's in the driveway at daycare in the car, I'll come back in and she'll, the other week she's like, Mom, you gotta watch out for turtles because they're crossing the road. And you know, so she's picking up little snippets here and there, and just the really unique and wholesome content. It's just really, really fun to hear.
Well, thank you so much. Have a great weekend. Good to talk to you. Good to talk to Juniper. Hello, Darby, and we sure appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. Have a good one.
You too. That's What's for Breakfast on KEXE. Coming up, we'll have the sports page.
You are listening to, where am I at here? 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji at 89.9 in Brainerd. Where are we? And on your smart speaker, and we operate translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. There we go. Since 1997, Northern Community Radio has been telling the stories of the people and land of northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. Keep KAXE people powered into the future with your support now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
Don't forget, Football is Life. Our soccer segment is coming up at 8:40 this morning. We do have a good chance for showers and possible thunderstorms today. Highs 65 to 70. Southwest winds 5 to 15. Rain may continue tonight, partly cloudy, with temperatures in the mid to upper 40s.
Then I turned to the sports page, and the Mets had blown it in the 13th inning. Papers can't make losing look like winning. I think the Phillies took it 5-4. There it was on the sports page. Only page that takes a firm position. Kind of like an honest politician. The kind you hardly find anymore. In fact, let's face it. The sports page is the only place to go when a fella wants to know the score.
Time for another edition of the sports page. It's Malachi Coons. I'm Heidi Holton. Joining us via Zoom is Fred Friedman, Megan Buffington, and Kyle Erickson. Thanks, you guys, for being here today.
Morning. You're welcome.
Morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, what are we starting with today?
Well, I'm going to just say really quickly that KXE owes me a huge thank you.
Oh, Lord.
You'll agree. I just came back from a 3-day road trip to St. Louis with senior correspondent Scott Hall.
Wow. Okay.
Wait, and so why did we owe you? You kept him busy?
I kept them out of Grand Rapids.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll take that.
Okay. I'm guessing you got a lot of stories of St. Louis. So right. What were some highlights?
Baseball, the Arch, Scott's College, Scott's College buddies, right? Malachi, this should be right up your alley. One block dedicated to St. Louis's number one product, the late, great Chuck Berry. Right?
There we go.
And Yeah, a lot of driving and too much food. And I think all of Itasca County owes me a
thing. Can you guys imagine being in the back seat of that car?
Oh, my gosh.
The smell.
Okay.
We're guessing you guys went to a ball game in St. Louis?
Two games. And
baseball, remember?
Well, baseball. And it's true what everybody says, regardless. No fans are as knowledgeable as Cardinal fans. They'll tell you what was going on in 1924. It all got multiple. They wear home and road shirts. They got the same uniforms they've had since 1910. We went to the site of the old ballpark on the north side, right, where more games have been played than any other baseball stadium in history because the Browns and the Cardinals played there. They didn't have different stadiums, so no off days. So imagine that for the groundskeepers. No off. So, yeah, we had a great time. We never ate dinner. Heavy lunch, no dinner. Very, 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 very odd. And Scott is arranging with you, Heidi, for an show up in a August Friday or late July.
Okay.
At KAXE. So you and Scott are supposed to work this out.
Okay. All right. Okay? And a sneak peek also that Fred, because of this road trip, Fred is doing the trivia today. So watch out.
Ford.
Oh, okay.
Second old Lord of the day. We're not off to a great start.
And Malachi, right? I got trivia lined up for you for many weeks where I ask you music history questions.
Okay. There we go. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Fred, should we not file those away for daily slice of green cheese? Save us some time.
Yeah, I don't care when it's done, but yeah, that's Megan, that's a great point.
Well, Kyle, what's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I usually like to start with our only well-functioning sports franchise, and so the Lynx had a tough loss to the second-best team in the league, the Las Vegas Aces, where they played a really poor first quarter, fell behind quite a bit, and it looked like they might get blown out, but they pulled it back together and ended up losing just by 3 points. Mm-hmm. And rebounded nicely with a blowout win after that. And so it's fun to think about what this team might be when Nafisa Collier comes back from injury healthy, when without what we assumed was just clearly their best player, they already have the best record in the league. Mm-hmm. And so it's fun thinking about. We talked a little bit about how late in the Timberwolves season when Anthony Edwards got hurt, it forced other players to step up, become, you know, leaders in their own right, fill the void, and it really helped them become better as a team. And so it's really cool to see who steps up, in addition to Miles, and how they're playing really, really good team basketball now. And I've got to believe that bodes well for their shot at another title this year.
Yeah, and I think we finish up the Commissioner's Cup, I think maybe, tonight. They play Golden State Valkyries tonight.
They're
on the road, so that means a late game, which is a little tough for me when they played the Sparks, and they did a great job on that a couple of nights ago. Malk and I were talking earlier. You were right about the Miles was the second overall draft pick, and I think has been surprising everybody in the entire league about how well she's doing. Scoring like 28 a game, 31 points a game, and just running the floor with sort of ease. It's been so much fun to be watching her and watch the team just enjoying each other. You know, it's been great basketball.
Yeah, for sure. So it's a long season. Come on, you know, let's see what happens. Avoid injuries, right?
Yeah. You know, with them adding two more leagues, so three in the last year, you know, last year they had the Valkyries were added, and then they have the two new teams from Portland and from Toronto. Next year, they're also the season's going to be expanded. They'll be going into November. They'll be playing more games as well. So good things to come from the WNBA, and it's just so much fun. Kayla McBride playing really well, a lot of threes. When she hits a three at the very beginning, you know it's going to be a really good game.
Like a streaky shooter.
She's on fire. Yeah.
How are the new teams doing? Are they expansion teams?
Yeah, I mean, the Portland Fire did not do great. Our once own Bridget Carlton is sort of their superstar, and she didn't have a great game. But they sold out their first games. I mean, they've been doing really well. Portland's really embracing them. And I don't really know about the, I mean, I think they've been doing okay, the new leagues as well, because they've got some great players on every single team. Every game is worth a watch.
They're at the WNBA, all women's basketball, the increase in talent, interest, fans, salaries, TV contracts, attendance. It's been so rewarding, huh?
Yeah. So when they played the LA Sparks, Sylvia Fowles is an assistant coach there. So fun to see her on the bench as well. And former Lynx players, of course, are assistant coaches this year and or have been for many years. So a lot of fun.
Yeah. I wanted to moving over to the PWHL. The Frost, the draft was just in the last couple of days. And the PWHL draft is interesting because a lot of the people being drafted were already like some of the best players at the Olympics. So it's like they're drafting people who are instantly going to have a big effect because they were already some of the best players in the world at the Olympics. Like Caroline Harvey from the Badgers went first overall. But the Frost got Sarah Swiderski, and that was her first round pick. And she kind of had a breakout season last year at Ohio State. So they got someone who like peaked their senior, not peaked, but like is really rising, and hopefully that'll help the team. But yeah, the PWHL draft was just happened. And mm-hmm. It's just kind of interesting to see these people who were like the best players at the best of best tournament weren't in the PWHL yet. They're like entering and being drafted already as some of the best players. So
you noticed every 4 years when there's an Olympics that when the draft is right after the Olympics, there's more interest because we're familiar with the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does really. A lot of these players' names I know from watching them play for Team USA or for some of these other teams. So it really, it's kind of a nice, it happened at a nice period after the Winter Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Frost lost a couple of players in the expansion draft. I think there's four more teams coming to the PWHL next year, but team's going to look a little different. Abby Murphy, too, standout from the U's college hockey team, went number two overall to Seattle's PWHL team, the Torrent. And we also took a player, the Frost took a player from Minnesota Duluth in the fourth round, Tova Henderson. So some more local folks to cheer for.
So Twins actually have been hitting the ball. They've got a, you know, I don't know what's going on with them. They're overcoming their horrible bullpen where Kyle and I point out they're either the worst or the second worst bullpen in the league. But, oh, my gosh, they've been hitting three home runs a couple of games in a row and actually scoring some runs down in Dallas-Fort Worth. So where they had to work around a World Cup game, by the way. And surprises me. The bullpen is terrible, but some days the Twins score runs. When they score enough to overcome their bullpen, they win. But their mistakes last year and giving away from the bullpen, the front office giving away the bullpen, remains the curse on the franchise. And they need to sell. The Poets need to sell. And there'll be a lot of news this summer when there's a lockout in baseball. A lot of discussion where we'll go from athletics to right to employer bargaining.
Mm-hmm. We're starting to get into the month and a half of trade rumors flying. Byron Buxton reaffirmed yesterday, I am a Twin. I am not going anywhere. But Joe Ryan is still kind of the lead name floating around as far as starting pitchers. I mean, I just pulled up just to confirm the trade deadline's August 3rd. And oh, there's Joe Ryan's face front and center as the guy at the top list of potential trade candidates. So we were talking about in my household, it's going to be an interesting test of this new Polad manager. And do you send Joe Ryan off? Because there goes any faith that anybody had that you might be a little bit different.
Right. Yeah. You know, Fred, you mentioned the home runs they're hitting. But thinking about Byron Buxton's stats, where he's been healthy almost the whole year. We're finally getting to see what all the hype was about all the years. He's hit 23 home runs. But because nobody is getting on base in front of him, he has 23 home runs, 13 doubles, only 36 runs batted in. So almost all solo home runs. And boy, you sure wish they had a guy like maybe a Luis Arraez at the top of the lineup to get on base in front of Buxton and some of these other guys. So the solo home runs could turn into 2- and 3-run home runs. But it really is fun finally seeing Buxton get healthy. And, you know, the guy's on a pace to hit 50-plus home runs and could set some franchise records if he stays hot, and just not enough a team around him to make a difference this year.
Yeah, when the team's RBI leaders are Bell and Lee, you know, wow. So, but that's the truth.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest in Buxton, even though he's said, I'm a twin for life. You know, we all know how that goes. And if the right package comes along, and if he, for instance, had a chance to go play for the Braves and be back home in Georgia, and they put together the right package, it's hard to think that he wouldn't at least consider it. You know,
I want you to know, Kyle, that we talked about this as soon as that notification came up that he said, I'm a twin. I guarantee on the Sports Pitch, they'll be saying, well, yeah, but does he really mean that?
It's like the dreaded vote of confidence that an NFL owner will give his coach when they've had a rough season. Yeah, you know they're saying the right thing, but there's other stuff happening behind the curtain, and that vote of confidence usually means that there's a firing announcement coming in about a week.
I'm curious whether his wife and his three boys, whether they live here, and whether in the fall months and the spring months during the academic year, whether they're in school here or whether they're in school in Southern Georgia. Because sometimes, you know, of course, we all know families, spouses they get a big say in terms
as
of.
They should.
As they should. The perfect example, we all know, Luis Pujols, you know, left St. Louis because his wife wanted to live in Southern California. Right, and that's why he left a contender to a team playing with him and Mike Trout, two of the five best players in the league, and they're a last place team. So, right, families have a say, and they should, you know, like Megan just said.
I want to jump back to hockey. Canes won a commanding game 6, 3-0 to win the cup on Sunday. Practically a Northern Minnesotan. Jordan Staal was the Stanley Cup MVP, grew up in Thunder Bay. So we'll give it to him. It counts. We'll claim him a little bit. And immediately handed the cup to Freddie Anderson, who said he was surprised to be handed the cup second. Turns out he told reporters after he tweaked his knee in game 2, so ended up having to sit out the rest of the finals. Brandon Bussey came in as the hero. But yeah, Freddie still got his flowers, and I'm sitting there watching it like no other sports franchise has a better like trophy presentation. Like normally you shut off the TV, but you got to watch everybody take their lap with the cup. Like nothing even comes close.
Hey, Megan, of the big teams of the four of the, excuse me, the professions, they're the only ones that I stay and watch after the game ends. And like Megan points out, fans, the team has a Northern Minnesota, a St. Paul, a Northern Minnesota, and Western Ontario, a major flavor the Canes do, including their coach, players, the whole deal.
And
the Stanley Cup, everybody, it is coming to St. Paul, it's coming to Duluth, and it's coming to Thunder Bay.
I wanted to ask.
I know. I'm excited.
Megan, so it's a league that prides itself on parity. This kind of continues the trend of in the salary cap era, the teams that have the highest contract have never won. And even beyond that, no one with a contract over $10 million AAV has won the Stanley Cup. How do you feel about that with the Wild's contracts? Does it make you a little nervous? It's not a super long trend, but it is continuing that having mega-high contracts like Kaprizov's has not won a team the Stanley Cup yet. Does that make you nervous, or what are your thoughts?
I don't think so, because we do still have some of that cap flexibility. You know, we're not quite in a position where, like, we can't make any moves. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on our cap situation by any means, but it's not dire. you know, it's not teams having to be like, I don't know how we're going to get under the cap sort of situation. So until we start getting in that conversation, you know, that's always concerning when it's, you're paying a guy too much that you can't do what the team needs. But I don't, it's one more curse and taboo on the Wild. Oh no, we're used to that. Find something else that'll scare me.
There we go. Positivity.
All right, Fred. Well, oh, go, Kyle, go ahead.
I was just going to say, speaking of titles and celebrations, we should probably note that, as predicted, the most Minnesota thing happened, and a few years after we traded away Carl Anthony Towns, our erstwhile franchise player, he went ahead and won a championship with the New York Knicks, following in the footsteps of Kevin Garnett and David Ortiz and others who left Minnesota and then won titles elsewhere. And Towns was always a good community guy.
How about Sam?
Yeah,
it's true. You can't forget about that. That's even better.
So, yeah, Sam Darnold. Thank you, Fred. So it's interesting to see, because for a long time, the truism in the NBA was that you need three superstars or three stars to win. And the Knicks have Brunson and Towns and just a whole bunch of really good niche-filling role players. So maybe there's a blueprint for the Wolves there where they don't need to give up a bunch of talent and what little draft capital they have and try to attract Kyrie Irving or somebody else. Maybe they just acquire some really, really good second-line talent to build around Anthony Edwards and the rest.
Heidi, you ready?
We're ready.
We're ready.
All right.
Bracing ourselves.
By the way, there's only one question that's before Heidi's birth date on this, so get ready.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Only one, though.
And I'm, I believe, the oldest of the correspondents here, so watch out, everybody.
Not counting me. So, hey, today's subject is all about the managers and coaches. Managers and coaches. For example, Tom Kelly was the manager when the Twins won their only two World Series in 1987 and 1991. So here we go. First question. The Twins were only in one other World Series when they lost the World Series in 1965 to the Dodgers. Who was the Twins manager, Kyle, in 1965? Anybody?
It's got to be for Kyle, if anyone.
What did you say? 65?
The year I graduated from high school.
Sam Meal.
Correct. Sam Mealy. Absolutely.
There we go. On the board.
Thanks for carrying, Kyle.
Okay. Who is the one person? This is Minnesota Gopher sports stuff. Who is the coach who coached at various times both the world champion Minneapolis Lakers, who won three titles here, and then the Minnesota Gophers basketball? Same person.
I should know the name, but let the record show I am not a Gopher. So,
Kyle,
I don't have any idea.
John Kundla.
Sure.
Who has won the most national NCAA women's basketball champions? Which coach has won by far the most championships?
Is it Ariema?
Correct.
Yeah.
Who's won the most men's collegiate basketball championship? Again, second place is not close.
Is it Krzyzewski? No, it's before that.
John Wooden.
John Wooden's correct. Very good, folks. All right, Northern Minnesota stuff. Name the Viking coach that insisted for many years that summer and preseason practice would occur in Bemidji for the Minnesota Vikings.
Could not tell you.
Who is his coach?
I got nothing. Do you
want initials?
No, that's not going to help.
Just, yeah.
NVB.
Is his last name Van Buren?
No, Napoleon Van Bonaparte.
Napoleon Van
Bonaparte. Norm Van Brocklin.
All right. That makes way more sense.
What NBA coach has won the most championships?
Oh, is it Phil Jackson?
What WNBA coach has won the most championships?
Cheryl Reeve?
Also correct. What NHL coach has won the most championships?
Oh, boy.
Megan?
Okay. Is it a French Canadian guy?
No, but he coached a French Canadian school.
Oh, I'm not going to get his name. It's got to be a Canadian's coach from back in the day or something like that.
Yeah. Scotty Bowman.
Oh, dang it. I could have had that one, actually. And Red Wings. Coached the Red Wings, too.
Correct. Okay, here's a really heavy question. Listen to this, folks. The University of Minnesota, between both campuses, Minneapolis and Duluth, has won an astounding 20 national hockey championships, men and women. Right? Okay. 12 by the Gophers, 8 by the Bulldogs. Okay. And can you name the coach who's won the most national championships of those 20? I'll give you a hint. Women's hockey. 5.
Oh, what?
Isn't that amazing? The U of M between both campuses has won 20 championships. Her name is Shannon Miller.
Ah, Shannon Miller. I do just want to say that when I was going to UMD, the Bulldogs swept the Gophers. They swept the Gophers like every year I was there. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
It was awesome. Absolutely true. Hey, who's the Major League Baseball manager who's both won the most games lifetime and lost the most games lifetime? Same person.
Is it La Russa?
No, that's good. He's second or third on the list.
Oh, dang.
This guy's number one, and he got away with wearing a suit, not a uniform, and he managed for 50 years.
Connie Mack.
Connie Mack, exactly.
The suit was the giveaway.
Last question, everybody. Name the Northern Minnesota native, right? Within KAXE territory, by the way, who is the head football coach at various times at the University of Missouri, the University of Notre Dame, and the Green Bay Packers. And by the way, a UMD alum.
Oh. I'm not going to get this. Is it Holmgren?
Nope.
Okay.
Kyle, do you know this?
I do not. That's a great question.
When were they the Packers coach?
Maybe late 70s.
Oh. I'm out.
Come on, Malachi. What are you here for if not to know Packers stuff?
Here's no question.
Do you guys know the people own the...
Proctor, Minnesota native Dan Devine.
Dan Devine. Missouri, that's a great
coach
name.
Packers, coach Notre Dame. That's a good question, I think.
That is a good question. I should have been there for that one.
That's it, guys.
Thanks, Fred. Thank you.
Well done, Fred. Thank you, Fred.
We'll check in with you next week. Coming up, stay tuned. We'll have more sports with Football is Life after we bring you local news and the Up North Report. You are tuned in to People Powered KAXE.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. We've had some suggestions already of topics for Football is Life. You can share those to 218-326-1234. Support for KAXE comes from Rural Pathways, helping rural nonprofits and communities find funding, measure impact, strengthen strategy, and plan for the future. More info available on Facebook and at ruralpathways.org. Rural Pathways, bold solutions for quiet places.
And thanks also to Lake Country Journal, a magazine showcasing the beauty, landscapes, and people of Lake Country. The February-March issue publishes the winners of their annual photo contest, also displayed at the Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport. Submissions all year round, lakecountryjournal.com.
Coming up at 8:40, Football is Life. Right now it is time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. A Nevis man will spend about a month in jail for allowing 11 unregistered voters to cast ballots in 2024. 65-year-old Timothy Scouten was the head election judge in Hubbard County's Bedora Township. He says he couldn't find registration forms, so he told election judges to write down the names of new voters and check their IDs to verify their addresses. Scouten admitted in his guilty plea that the registration forms were later located in the box he returned to the county auditor. The Minnesota Star Tribune reports Skouten was visibly emotional as Judge Catherine Lorsbach explained why she believed jail time was necessary. She says his actions undermined public confidence in a foundational tenet of our democracy. Quote, "It does not appear to be a reflection of your character, but your actions had a significant consequence." Skouten's defense attorney had asked the judge to reduce the felony offense to a gross misdemeanor. He says Skouten didn't act with malice. Rather, he was anxious and overwhelmed by the higher-than-normal voter turnout. He also noted that Skouten has no criminal history and dedicated his life to civic service, from serving in the military to volunteering as head election judge since the early 2000s. Skouten cannot serve as an election judge again. He must pay a $200 fine and serve 26 days in jail, in addition to the four he served after charges were filed in 2024. Congressman Pete Stauber toured the Hibbing Power Plant and South Water Treatment Plant Wednesday. Aaron Bowman was there and has more.
Earlier this year, President Donald Trump signed a bipartisan appropriations bill. The bill included $10 million of federal funding for Northland infrastructure projects. $1 million of those dollars will fund Hibbing water, access, treatment, expansion, and reliability projects. The projects look to modernize the water system. The current plan outlines improvements through 2033. Costs are estimated at $74.5 million.
The roads and building constructions across the entire district are a priority, including water infrastructure projects like this.
3 years ago, Stauber went on the same tour.
After that tour, we looked at the opportunity to put forth a recommendation for community-funded projects.
Planned improvements include the replacing of water mains, adding a new treatment center, automating the South Water Treatment Plant, and reinforcing the over 100-year-old reservoir. Hibbing is in the process of replacing water mains due to lead exposure. Energy supply manager Paul Plowman says this is a big moment for Hibbing.
Fortunately, it's not the end for us. As they were saying, you know, part of this project is just the start.
Stauber's tour comes as the campaign season is in full swing for his reelection. He says he isn't going to take the election for granted.
We're going to go harder than we did the last time, harder than we did the first time, and I want to be able to continue to represent the 8th Congressional District. I think it's the best congressional district in the state.
The congressman's first hurdle is a Republican primary challenge in August. Aaron Bowman, KEXE News.
Financial disclosure reports have been filed by members of Congress. The reports cover lawmakers' finances in 2025 and are filed with the House Ethics Committee. MinnPost took a closer look at those filed by Minnesota's delegation. Members of Congress are required to report certain income, assets, liabilities, and transactions, but they do so in wide dollar ranges. 7th District Republican Representative Michelle Fishbach reported ownership of three rental properties in Painesville. They generated between $10,000 and $30,000 in rental income in 2025. Fishbach also reported assets, including stocks, mutual funds, and farmland, between $200,000 and $700,000. She also has mortgages on rental property, residences, and a vacation home that total somewhere between $300,000 and $700,000, along with $60,000 to $115,000 in student loans. 8th District Republican Representative Pete Stauber requested an extension on his financial reporting form. He now has until mid-August to file. The lawmaker's 2024 report showed he owned a rental property in Hermantown and one in Proctor and a commercial building in Duluth. Stauber also listed interest in two real estate companies. He also had mortgages on rental properties and a mortgage on his home worth between $500,000 and $1 million. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
You can sign up for a podcast of the Up North Report as well as the Season Watch pod, all available at kaxe.org through your usual podcast platform, Spotify, Apple, all the things.
Support for KEXE comes from our listener members and from Bratton Tree Care, located in Grand Rapids, Minnesota, providing quality service to the Minnesota Northland. With 5 years' experience and an ISA arborist on staff, Bratton Tree Care is able to handle all of your tree service needs. Learn more at brattontreecare.com.
Thanks also to Boreal Brushworks Painting in Bemidji, providing full-service interior painting in residential locations throughout northern Minnesota with custom kitchen cabinet refinishing, as well as one-room or whole-house repainting. BorealBrushworksPainting.com.
And from the Veteran Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County, this crisis intervention service is a program of first call for help 211 and provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to veterans and their families who are in crisis. Trained providers are available to serve fellow veterans 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 211.
Good chance for showers and possible thunderstorms today, highs 65 to 70, and overnight partly cloudy, lows in the mid to upper 40s. But the next couple of days, sunny with highs upper 60s to low to mid 70s across northern Minnesota.
Coming up, football is life. Kicking things off with whatever this is.
I'm from Bosnia, take me to America. I really want to see Statue of Liberty. I can no longer wait, take me to United States. Take me to Golden Gate, I will assimilate.
I guess that is our new theme song. It is time for Football is Life. Joined now on KAXC, Heidi Holton's across the desk from me. We've got DJ Dang tuning in from Bemidji, Megan Buffington from Bovee, Minnesota, and Chris Walker from Sunny Park in Vancouver, Canada. Let's start things off with Dan. What did we just hear, and why did we hear it?
Are you going to try and pronounce a name?
No.
Come on, you're looking right at it. I can't see it right in front of me.
I'm not looking right at it.
It's the unofficial Bosnian Herzegovina theme song by, I think the band's been around for 20-some years, and they're sort of like ska, Balkan horn, punk mix, and now they're just a bunch of old guys, and they made a great song about going to America and seeing the Statue of Liberty. And before the country could come out with their own theme song, those guys beat them to it, and it's become the unofficial theme song. So it's getting played anywhere Bosnians are, that song's getting played.
It didn't work yesterday.
Well,
ouch.
We did just hear from Tom Cobb saying, great theme song. Thumbs up.
Okay.
So. Right on. Yes.
All right. We get better every single week. So
that's a new football fan right there, Tom Cobb. New football fan. Facts.
He's actually closeted really into Balkan punk polka, whatever we just heard.
You're oddly not wrong, Megan.
both things can be true.
Yeah. Okay. So, folks, the first round of games completed. Yesterday, we had our first teams playing their second games. Mexico is through to the knockout stage, I would guess, with two wins. How are you feeling? How's everyone doing? USA coming up today at 3.
I'm happy for Mexico. One of their starting forwards is a kid from Chicago, Brian Gutierrez, who played for Chicago Fire and came up through the Chicago Fire Academy. He played on U.S. national team youth teams and did a couple friendlies with the senior team. And then they're like, we don't think you're good enough. And he's like, fine, my mom and dad were born in Mexico. I'll get a passport. And boom, now he's starting in the World Cup in Mexico, in Estadio Azteca, in Guadalajara, like living the dream. And then I watched the game in Spanish last night, and all I kept hearing I didn't understand half the game because my Spanish is not that fluent. But all I could hear is the announcers go, Brian Gutierrez. Like, he had a game. So happy for that kid. And, yeah, I think the longer Mexico's in the tournament, the more interesting the tournament will be.
And our first of multiple throughout this segment, foreign correspondents, Chris Walker. Canada had a very big game yesterday. Were you already in Canada when that happened?
We were set to fly in yesterday afternoon to Vancouver, but then realized that Canada was playing Qatar in Vancouver, so we changed our flight. I have to give the biggest shout out to my two girls who woke up at 4 in the morning to get on a flight at 6 a.m. from Winnipeg to Vancouver, and we made sure that we went downtown and got right in the middle of the march to the stadium with Canada's supporters group known as the Voyagers. And it was just incredible. Our girls had a blast. My wife had a blast. We were right in the middle of this massive group of Canadians who were just singing, chanting, and walking to the stadium. And what we hadn't realized is, you know, we weren't moving as fast and we weren't going to the game. So we said, let's take a train to one of the official watch parties. And when we got up high, that's why we figured out quickly why we weren't moving, because it was block after block after block in the city of Vancouver of red. The whole city was painted red. Everyone was out and about yesterday before the game, after the game. People were singing and cheering, and it was just incredible to experience firsthand. Canada completely dismissed Qatar and won 6-0. David had a hat trick. Qatar had two red cards, had a little bit of everything, but it was an experience to be in the city where it happened.
Yeah, four.
So,
points.
Chris, are you accidentally making Canadian fans out of your girls?
my oldest daughter Kirby said, "Dad, I think I want to cheer for Canada for the rest of the tournament." I go, "That's fine. We can do that. We love Canada."
They're burning their Messi jerseys.
We got a big game for the U.S. today. I said we brought some U.S. jerseys to wear. We're going to go to one of the fan festivals and watch the game today at noon West Coast time. Huge game against Australia for the Americans.
Yeah, so Pulisic out. It's looking likely out. Thanks to Nathan for sending me that information as I wasn't paying attention. When he went out at halftime in the first game, they didn't look... Later on in the half, they really pulled it together. But I would say, like, when they came out of the half with the new lineup, they didn't look as good as they've been playing in the first half. But they did pull it back together, obviously. And by the end of the game, they were cruising. What are our thoughts? How are they going to line up their main creative player, looking like he might be out today?
So to recap, the U.S. beat Paraguay 4-1 in their World Cup opener. And I think put a lot of fears to rest, would be safe to say, Chris.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was for a while now, I mean, since the U.S., I think, even, you know, made the knockout round in 2014, right? They missed out on the World Cup in 2018. Yes, they did make the knockout round in 2022, but there was never that much confidence in the U.S. national team. There was a lot of inner turmoil. And I'm already losing track of what day it is,
Friday.
But... the game last Friday against Paraguay, I mean, within 90 minutes, it's amazing how much of the narrative can be flipped and the perception of the team in 90 minutes. Because since then, I mean, it feels like we're winning the World Cup. Not seriously, of course, but one game has just made a huge difference. It's the most goals a U.S. team has ever scored in a World Cup game. And they're absolutely the favorites now to win the group, because Australia upset Turkey. And, you know, Australia is going to be a difficult team to play against, as we saw. But I think right now they're starting to think that they can really make a special run here with a home World Cup.
So I know Chris is joking, but soccer is such a passionate sport. And when your team does something really good, and yeah, he's joking, like, we're going to win the whole thing. Like, that's kind of a thought in the back of people's minds, is like, maybe we could make it pretty far. And I don't know how realistic that is, but boy, they just all of a sudden were clicking on all cylinders in that game. It was super fun to watch.
All right, you guys.
I mean, the U.S. is now in top 10 in power rankings after not being there at all.
That's excessive. So that's excessive, but I love that.
Everyone is number 9. We're not getting too crazy, but.
Okay, you guys all shucked. You dodged the question, though. No Pulisic. How are they? You all yeah. Skipped it.
I'm going to go back to the player I mentioned last week, and Malachi was sitting next to me during the game, right at the end of the U.S. game, when Giovanni Reyna scored a goal. So. Just I could not be happier for him to be on this team after what he's went through, and a guy who just cannot find any stability at the club level. He showed us why he is on this team with that goal against Paraguay. Now, I don't know if he'll start on the outside. I could see maybe Timothy Weah playing on that side, although he's normally on the right. So the nice thing is, in the last game, you had Reyna on the bench. You had Weah on the bench. I think they can move some things around, and if Pulisic can't play, they have enough midfield depth, at least attacking midfield depth, to shuffle some things around. So that would be one of my guesses on that outside.
Tim Weah. It's got to be Tim Weah, because they need a workhorse, and Reyna's not a workhorse. They need someone to run with the Aussies and then bring Reyna in for the last 20 minutes and let him do his magic.
Yeah, 3 p.m. today, as Chris mentioned.
2 p.m.
2 p.m. Okay. Two, my bad. Australia won also, so for both these teams, this is sort of if they win this one, they've already taken care of it. You've pretty much made it through the next round. So I think it's going to be an awesome game. And yeah, with Turkey losing, the group dynamics definitely – have shifted. We've had a couple of texts. So Kate from Popaski and Nate from Lake Elmo, both talking about the Tartan Army in Boston. Let's talk fans, folks. What do we love? First of all, the Tartan Army is a pretty awesome name. What are people loving about the Scots in Boston?
I think they just bring a super positive party atmosphere, like relentlessly so. They showed up at a Boston Red Sox against Texas Rangers baseball game, and those fans will never forget what a baseball game could actually be like thanks to the Scots. Like, they sang the whole game, they're standing up, and people just, even the players are like, oh my gosh, I've never been around anything like that. They're just large and in charge of Boston right now.
My favorite part of that entire sequence of videos, for all you casual sports fans and baseball fans, even just go Google Scotland Fenway Park and there's video after video, is the one of them taking over the entire concourse. I don't know if it was before the game, after the game, during the game. And if you look closely, there are still people trying to walk through the concourse, maybe to get to their seats or to the bathroom. And there's just, it is a thunderous roar of the Scotland fans nonstop singing "We've Got Super John McGinn" because that's their goal scorer, and they just cannot stop. And how, I don't know if I've ever wanted to be transported into a place more than ever when I watched that video of them in Boston.
Yeah. I do need to point out, as I'm looking for things to add this conversation, not entirely because of the World Cup, but Boston and Glasgow are now like officially signing paperwork to become like sister cities.
Just from this? Oh, that's beautiful.
Partially as a result of this.
Hey, we just got a text in from our super fan, Bianca, who is in Portland, Oregon today. And she says she's going to be watching Plein Air with super fans on Monday in Portland. Let's just hope Argentina wins again.
Nice.
So Argentina looks good. Yeah, let's talk about
the superstars.
Maybe the superstars and the super teams. Pretty much all of the pre-tournament favorites, I would say, did very well. Notable exception is Spain.
Spain.
And that was just incredible, which we can get into that. But let's talk some of the big teams. Most of them went through unscathed. A lot of the stars had a lot of goals. Messi, Haaland, Harry Kane looked unbelievable.
Mbappe.
Mbappe scored, but let's talk about France, because I haven't actually got to see this guy play. But Michael Olise, is he the best player in the world? It was unbelievable. He just glides around the field past people like they're nothing. And he was a key part of all those France goals. I think France still is the favorite. But for me, that was a pleasure to watch Michael Olise. I haven't actually gotten a chance to see him. And are you guys familiar with his game? It's
his
unbelievable.
Pass, a little bit. He plays for Bayern Munich, which I don't get to watch a lot outside of Champions League. But his pass to Mbappe on that second goal, he cut out four players. And I had to watch it over and over and over. And as a coach, I was like, how did he even see that? How did he – and then complete that pass. It's like, oh, it's so deadly. Like, incredible vision and incredible ball movement. Soccer can be such a creative game, and this player, Michael Olise, I think is someone that really brings that and will be fun to watch as they go on.
Looking at Olise's stats, I have to ask now, you guys track chances created? Can I learn more about that stat?
You know, there's so few goals and like just a huge part of it, and so much of the game is obviously played in the build-up and in the midfield, so just creating a chance is it such a key thing that it is kind of an important statistic.
Is it comparable to like a shots on goal?
No, because a lot of like...
not exactly a shot, but like...
Yeah, there's a lot of close chances in football that never end up being a save or on net. It could be a cross that like flashes across the box that no one gets a foot on or anything.
Yeah, I think it's getting the ball in the box, whether you're dribbling it into the 18-yard box or sending a cross in, and you're just creating drama. Like, you're creating trouble. Anything can happen, and you're putting pressure on the other team, so they have a stat for that, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a good stat for it was an interesting game.
Yes.
And yeah, he's a baller, Michael Olise.
And you know Mbappe's going to score. For Bianca's team, so I did see a few people saying, like a question going in, they thought the rest of the Argentina team might be better than last year. And the question was, how much worse is Messi 4 years later? Okay?
Scoring a hat trick.
So what do we...
He looked awful.
Chris, what do you think about that? Argentina, they weren't on my radar. I was really thinking Spain and France, but they did look good. But I would say Algeria is not... you know, top level competition.
No, I'm blanking on who else is in their group and kind of when their first real test will come. But also, you never know, right? We talked about alluded to Spain tying Cabo Verde, and you just don't know in the World Cup. Even Portugal, we didn't mention them. They tied the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Portugal is some people's sneaky favorites to win this World Cup. So you got to bring it every game, and Argentina absolutely brought it. I'm with you, right? The picks everyone have been talking about for the World Cup to win it all. Spain and France are the easy ones, but when Argentina rolled out their roster, it was kind of one of those moments where you're like, oh, that's right. They have Julian Alvarez from Atletico Madrid, who might be going to Real Madrid, right? They have Thiago Almada, who used to play in MLS. And when you look at their roster, they are in an incredibly deep team. But for an incredibly deep team, all they needed was one player to score his first ever hat trick. In my opinion, the greatest player of all time, Lionel Messi, put on a show in Kansas City. And if people hadn't really been thinking of Argentina before because they've already won, I think they definitely are now.
Yeah, they have a pretty easy group there with Austria and Jordan, I think, are the other two teams they have yet to play yet. So obviously they're going to get out of that group. And yeah, I would not want to play Argentina if I was country A, B, C, D, or Z. No way. Like maybe later in the tournament, but in the round of 32, I don't want to see
what that. I love, too, is the South American representation in the U.S. I mean, that game in Kansas City looked like you were in Buenos Aires. When Uzbekistan played Colombia and Mexico, it looked like you were in Bogota. I mean, the South American fans are showing up maybe more than anyone and filling the stands. Philadelphia, the Ecuadorians in Philadelphia.
Yeah, that was crazy. Even though they lost, that was...
Even though they lost. And that's a player, I'll tell you what, if you want to look at it beyond the superstars, one of my friends told me already, he goes, I think I'm an Ivory Coast fan. Who's this number 11? Yan Diomande. When you want to talk about chances created, this guy wreaks havoc on the outside. He's number 11 for Cote d'Ivoire. And 2 years ago was playing high school soccer in Florida. And now he is rumored to be sold to Liverpool, linked to some of the biggest clubs this summer for $100 million plus. He really was all over that game and helped lead Cote d'Ivoire to that win.
Before we run out of time here, what matches are you guys looking forward to watching before the next Football is Life?
Today, this afternoon's match, the U.S. and Australia.
Yep, definitely that one. Looking ahead to the next few days, Germany...
Scotland, Morocco. I want to watch any Scotland game.
Yeah, the Scotland games. And honestly, like, Morocco and also a lot of teams from Africa are performing. Morocco is kind of the, I would say, like, over the last... They had a breakout 4 years ago, just playing super attractive, attacking, counter-attacking football. Morocco still looks really good. They're playing Scotland. We've also got Germany versus Ivory Coast tomorrow.
Yes,
so Germany, did you guys see that Curaçao did just as good as versus Germany as Brazil did? Okay, sorry. That's a joke for you'd have to watch previous World Cups. But
aren't you supposed to be a Germany friend now, Malachi, temporarily?
Yeah, for sure. I'm shifting my allegiances hour by hour. I'll just be honest.
There's so many teams you can do that.
Sweden and Netherlands. Sweden is a team who really, in a weird way, almost shouldn't have been in this tournament, but the new European qualifying format is a bit odd, but they came out and took it to Tunisia 5-1, so that should be a great match. And then I also have Norway, Senegal. That group to me is the group of death, which, you know, three teams should make it out of that group, but Senegal, even though they got beat by France is one of the heavy favorites. So I don't think Senegal is going to roll over, and Norway looks like a really fun team to watch.
Yeah, Senegal could have. Yeah, if they would have taken their chances, that one could have been closer. Let's talk, because someone also mentioned this to me. So on the main desk for the big games, we have a very strange lineup. Okay, let's start with, it's Thierry Henry, it's Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and Alexi Lawless. to start, they have no chemistry. Okay, they have zero chemistry.
It's
all
awful.
Of them. Thierry Henry is the only one of those three who's actually good at his job, and it makes sense. He's been doing Champions League games for a long time. Okay, to set the scene, one of the greatest of all time. Zlatan, unique, also one of the best of all time, purely talented football players. And then America trots up Alexi Lawless to go alongside them, and he is just the worst. He's like painfully American. Does that make sense to you? He's brash. He's loud. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And what do you guys think? I've seen people on the internet just roasting this lineup. It's like,
I think Lawless is there just to say stupid stuff and like try and poke Zlatan and or make Thierry Henry roll his eyes, and he's super succeeding in that. The body language is insane. Like, they won't even turn their shoulders towards him. They don't look at him.
No. Just watch. If you want to just do like a body language, like psychology, watch these three guys sit together. And but, he, you know, he's just loud. He's in your face. I get what you're saying. That's probably why they had him on there. Like, you know, purely track record, he doesn't compare to the other two at
all. Before we go real quick, we did get another text in from our texter from last week that said the U.S. won't make it out of the group stage. Wah, wah, wah. But anyways, they're texting in again this week. It says, I think their favorite games have been Spain drawing to Cape Verde and Congo drawing with Portugal. Those were both huge games. Love seeing the underdogs humbling the favorites. Keep coming with the text. We love it.
Okay, predictions, USA.